Heads up. I just have to say that as a member of Congress, I am outraged that I was warrantlessly spied on.
But Congresswoman Harmon, putting aside the fact that you most likely committed a crime with your lobbying for AIPAC, you have been a constant champion of government spying without a warrant. You personally helped delay the initial New York Times story about Bush's illegal spying. Then you called for the Times to be prosecuted. Then you voted to gut FISA and grant the telecoms immunity.
I know, but they weren't supposed to illegally spy on me. They were supposed to illegally spy on people other than me. Who would have thought that people who broke the law would be so untrustworthy? This interview never happened.
Of course, Representative Peter King, Republican of New York, he's on MSNBC, and he's talking about this whole scare. Government and Department of Homeland Security are targeting right-wing groups. They was the same exact report about left-wing groups 3 months ago, and there was not a peep about it. And during the Bush administration, they went after the Quakers, the vegans, and every left-wing group you could imagine and infiltrated on them and spied on them.
This week in Radical History for the week starting April 27th, the fall of Saigon and May Day edition.
Yo, check this out, man.
Inspiration for the show came from the Slingshot organizer, and radical info can be found at the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website. So, starting on April 27th, 1759, feminist Mary Wollstonecraft is born in England. In 1792, she wrote A Vindication of the Rights of Women, one of the earliest surviving works on feminism. This treatise attacks the social forces that suppressed women as economic, political, and intellectual inferiors to men. Mary Wollstonecraft. Also on April 27th, 1894, trial of French anarchist Emily Henry for the bombing of a cafe on February 12th and a police station. Emily Henry proudly acknowledges his actions and reads a declaration in court in which he analyzes a corrupt society and calls for future revolts around the world. Also on this date in 1904, Congress extends the Chinese Exclusion Act, immediately making it unlawful for Chinese laborers to enter the United States and denying naturalized citizenship to those Chinese already here. The Chinese being the Mexicans of their day, the Mexicans being the Italians, the Irish, the Black, Native Americans of their day. And the beat goes on and on and on. Also on this date, in 1986, video pirate Captain Midnight interrupts HBO with a public service message. Here's a special Mike Cannon report.
Department's Criminal Division is looking into a weekend incident in which someone suddenly interrupted a home box office movie on cable.
32 minutes past midnight Sunday morning, HBO viewers east of the Mississippi suddenly had their movie, The Falcon and the Snowman, interrupted. The signal got weaker, then, after 4 minutes, the movie resumed. Someone with access to a large satellite transmission dish, probably in or near the contiguous United States, but untraceable in so large an area, had simply aimed at the appropriate satellite and, using HBO's published frequency, transmitted with more power than HBO, which overrode and replaced the HBO signal.
This is a problem involving vulnerability on the part of anyone who uses satellites for any kind of communication.
That includes banks with their financial transactions, telephone users, and the commercial TV networks with entertainment and news shows. The Federal Communications Commission is worried. People, the time has
come. This is your radio reporter, Hannah George. On this day, April 27th in 1962, Los Angeles police murdered Nation of Islam member Ronald Stokes in cold blood. Armed police units then raided the Nation of Islam mosque in Los Angeles, shooting at least 6 unarmed Muslims and beating many others for no reason. The FBI labeled the Nation of Islam a threat, claiming that members had ties to communism and the Black Liberation Movement. Police training manuals portrayed Nation of Islam members as militant and psychotic in their hatred of Caucasians, conveniently turning them into justifiable targets for police brutality. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
This week in radical history for April 28th, 1798 in the high seas. Fletcher Christian leads a group of mutineers against Captain William Bligh aboard the HMS Bounty, history's most famous mutiny. Also on April 28th in 1861, German-American anarchist Henry Boyer is born. Boyer immigrated to the United States in 1890, where he worked as a carpenter in Pittsburgh. He became involved with the anarchist movement there and followed the events of the Haymarket bombing in Chicago. In 1893, Boyer was arrested and sent to prison for 5 years for distributing leaflets during a homestead strike, where Alexander Berkman had attempted to assassinate Henry Frick.
On or around this day in 1897, the Native American Chickasaw and Choctaw nations agreed to a number of provisions under the Dawes Act, passed several years earlier by the U.S. Congress, which greatly undermined their tribal sovereignty by radically altering the way tribes approached the issue of land ownership. Most of America's First Nations viewed the land deeded to them as a collective asset to be administered democratically by the tribal council. The Dawes Act effectively privatized the land and assigned allotments to individual males, with the remainder left available for white settlers to claim. Individual Indian landowners were also free to sell their allotments, which many of them did in desperation due to extreme poverty. And in 1965, the United States invaded the Dominican Republic for the fourth time under the pretense of protecting American interests, but in reality to prevent the return of formerly elected reformist President Juan Bosch, who had ascended to office after the overthrow of the nation's previous dictator, Trujillo, who was supported by the United States. And those are just some of the events in world history that took place on this day, April 28th. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
Again, thanks to Neighborhood Network of Columbus, Ohio, and the Radio Roots crew from WBAI in New York, whose awesome audio I gently nip and tuck for the show. More from them later. Also on April 28th, 1967, Muhammad Ali, formerly Cassius Clay, refuses to be drafted and to fight in Vietnam, so he's stripped of his boxing title within hours. He'd famously say why he wouldn't go fight, "No Viet Cong ever called me nigger."
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Crystal Graham. On this day, April 28th, in 1987, an engineer from the United States named Benjamin Linder was killed in Nicaragua in an ambush led by the U.S.-funded Concha rebels. Benjamin Linder was one of many young Americans who traveled to Nicaragua in order to support the 1979 Sandinista Revolution, the same revolution that the U.S. government viewed as a huge threat to American interests in Central and South America. Around this time, the CIA secretly trained and armed thousands of Concha rebels whose job it was to destroy the Sandinista Revolution. After Linder's death, many enraged Americans publicly condemned U.S. intervention in Nicaragua, claiming that their tax dollars had been used to finance the killing of an American citizen. It's as if the fact that this was a covert war, which led to the murder of thousands of Nicaraguan civilians, wasn't enough, since it was only until an American citizen was killed that opposition grew in this country. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
This week in radical history, for April 29th, 1895, U.S. warships sent to Nicaragua to protect American interests.
In 1970, on this day, the United States launched the illegal invasion of Cambodia using South Vietnamese troops and U.S. advisors and planes. The U.S. had secretly been bombing Cambodia for an entire year, ostensibly to cut off supply routes used by the North Vietnamese to support resistance fighters in South Vietnam. But on this day, the ground assault began, and the U.S. war in Cambodia could no longer be concealed. And this sparked protests, especially in college campuses around the country, including one at Kent State University, during which a military recruitment building on the campus was destroyed by fire. By the time the Vietnam War ended, Cambodia would be the most bombed country in the world, and the civil war which broke out there, due in part to the destabilization caused by the U.S. aggression, gave rise to the brutal Khmer Rouge regime of Pol Pot.
On this day, April 29th, in 1992, three officers of the LAPD charged with brutally beating a black man named Rodney King were acquitted by a predominantly white jury. Later that evening, violent riots broke out all around Los Angeles as the black community began to angrily show their disapproval of the verdict. While the beating of Rodney King was caught on videotape and widely circulated, the officers involved were acquitted based on the officer's testimony that King was resisting arrest and also on a short segment of the videotape in which King was seen attempting to fight back. The rioting continued for many days, during which over 50 people were killed and thousands injured. These riots erupted as an explosion of tension, which had been building up in response to the LAPD use of excessive force and racial profiling. So if these violent tactics go on to spark violent backlash, then where does this cycle of violence end?
This week in radical history for April 30th.
On this day, April 30th in 1789, George Washington took the oath of office, becoming the first elected U.S. president. Washington was a celebrated hero of the Revolutionary War, and he constantly struggled to reconcile the ideals of the Revolution and the Constitution with the realities of slavery. As a Virginia plantation owner and a lifelong slave owner himself, Washington was certainly invested in the institution of slavery. While written documents show that he struggled with the morality of slavery, as a political figure, he never took the risk and voiced his abolitionist thinking. Instead, he signed a great deal of racist legislation into law. That's politics for you. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
On this day, April 30th in 1871, 147 Apache people in the temporary settlement near the U.S. military outpost in Arizona known as Camp Grant were massacred by a militia of Mexicans and Tohono O'odham people under the command of white ranchers and politicians. Many Apaches were being displaced from their ancestral lands by the spread of white-owned ranching operations and were forced to wander the desert foraging for food. Occasional raids were staged against ranchers' herds, and certain groups of Apache and Yavapai warriors would occasionally attack non-Indian travelers or homesteaders for provisions. The group that settled near Camp Grant, however, had developed peaceful relations with the surrounding white settlers, and yet were blamed for many of the attacks. 104 of the attackers were indicted for the crime, but an all-white jury in Tucson took just 19 minutes to find them all not guilty.
Of course, on April 30th in 1975, the U.S. flees Saigon with its tail between its legs. Remember the helicopters flying off the embassy roofs? One would have thought that these images would have prevented unnecessary wars like the invasion of Iraq. Instead, neocon conmen can easily manipulate 82% of the U.S. public to follow their leaders into another useless war. As the TV show MASH once said, war does not end, they just take it on the road. And all roads led to Iraq this time. When will we see the inevitable helicopters flying off the U.S. embassy roofs in Baghdad? Do you know who McCann and Jubb was? They are the last two killed in Nam. And who will be the last to die in Iraq? Here's just a few minutes of audio from the Vietnam evacuation, lest we forget.
From CBS News headquarters in New York, with Dan Rather substituting for Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. South Vietnam now is under communist control. Early today, beginning with a jeepload of rather ragtag Viet Cong soldiers, then truck after truck of heavily armed North Vietnamese regular troops, the communists entered Saigon in force. South Vietnamese President Duong Van surrendered his government unconditionally. Communist tanks smashed through the heavy gates of the presidential palace, flew the Viet Cong flag overhead, and took men away in a jeep. His whereabouts are not known. The surrender came just 4 hours after the last Americans were pulled out of Saigon. Here is the first film of that historic evacuation.
The U.S. Embassy helicopters flew from roof to roof, plucking up stranded Americans and occasionally depositing them on the landing pad atop the embassy. But from the roof of the Carabel Hotel in downtown Saigon, it looked as though every pilot in the South Vietnamese Air Force who could get his hands on an aircraft had decided that now was the time to get away. American Marines brought in to guard the helicopter landing zone stayed close to bunkers as the steady thump of rockets and the clatter of small arms kept up throughout the day. For them, it is only the first leg in a journey away from Vietnam and the war, but perhaps an uncertain future in America. Peter Collins, CBS News, with the final American withdrawal from Vietnam.
Some Americans who pushed towards the bus tried to pull their Vietnamese wives and children along with them. Desperate scenes with families separated and crying out for help, pleading not to be left behind, clutching at the last straw of hope. No one wanted to be left in this crowd that at times was strangely quiet, but that always was on the verge of panic. We all decided to try and reach the United States Embassy, and once there, we found it surrounded by Vietnamese looking for a way in and a way out. Helicopters were landing on the roof and inside the compound as we walked to the back of the embassy. We had to push and shove our way through a crowd of several hundred Vietnamese trying to scale the walls, only to be knocked back by U.S. Marines. The American fleet had been having problems since the start of the evacuation, not with the arrival of South Vietnamese pilots and their helicopters loaded with family and friends. Hovering above the decks to unload their passengers, the pilots were unfamiliar with landing their craft on a moving ship. One crashed into the side of the USS Blue Ridge. Others managed to crash land on the deck of the ship. For those that did manage to put down, they were simply pushed over the side and into the sea by U.S. sailors and Marines to make room for the returning American craft based on that ship, filled with evacuees from Saigon. Many hours later, as one of the last evacuees arrived, U.S. Ambassador Graham Martin, the final American ambassador stationed in South Vietnam. After so many long and bitter years, the American involvement in Vietnam was over. Ed Bradley, CBS News, Manila.
Last Friday, former South Vietnamese Premier Nguyen Cao Ky exhorted his countrymen to remain in Vietnam even if the communists took over, saying those who flee are cowards. Today, Ky was reported on an American evacuation ship in the South China Sea after being taken from Saigon on an American helicopter. Just before the communists entered Saigon, one government police colonel walked to an army memorial statue at the National Assembly, saluted it, then fatally shot himself.
Mark my words, we'll be seeing and hearing similar images someday from Baghdad. This week in Radical History for May 1st, of course, it is May Day. Here's a little audio nod to that.
It's May Day, the first day in the month of May, a day with significance around the world dating back to pre-biblical times, when various indigenous cultures throughout Europe and parts of Asia celebrated this day as the height of the spring planting season. The pagan holiday of Beltane, which originated as a Gaelic spring festival, often corresponds with May 1st, and the Saxon festival of the Maypole is also traditionally held on this day. May 1st is better known around the world today as a celebration of the achievements and sacrifices of organized labor, as May 1st is an international workers' holiday in most countries. May 1st was chosen as a labor holiday in 1886 by the Second International, a gathering of socialist and labor activists and independence advocates in Paris, France, the same group that founded the International Women's Day, which falls in March. The first such May Day was held the following year in commemoration of the Haymarket Massacre in Chicago, where police attacked a crowd of demonstrators who were calling for general strike to demand an 8-hour workday. Since then, May Day marches have been held all over the world. It has also been used as an occasion for protest against various wars, such as in 1971 in the U.S. and simultaneously in South Vietnam to protest the Vietnam War. In 2008, longshoremen on both the east and west coasts of the United States are staging work stoppages to protest the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and immigrant rights groups are marching in major cities calling for humane and comprehensive immigration reform. Ironically, this is also the birthday of one of America's greatest historical labor leaders, Mary Harris, also known as Mother Jones, the Irish immigrant who championed the cause of coal miners from Pennsylvania to the southern Appalachian coal fields, where, by the way, there was yet another explosion on this day in 1907 at the White Oak Fuel Company in Scarborough, West Virginia, that killed 43 workers. Harris, who once admonished the American labor activists to, quote, pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living, was born on this day in 1830 and fought like hell right up until her death at the age of 100. Those are just some of the events in world history that happened on this day, May 1st. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis.
Monsieur R. Oria, Mr. Frankie, Kiki la record, l'international 2006.
This has been This Week in Radical History, produced with TLC from the mobile fortress of Glee Glee Studios. Remember, this Friday is May Day. Fire the boss in your own head and take the day off, will ya? Remember our martyrs and all that have fought for real justice and real change. Or, man, just enjoy the spring day. Lastly, a reminder on this May Day. I am always, forever, and eternally yours in a struggle. Mike Cannon. My soul.
victims of aggression, for the tyrants fill your minds. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended, unless enjoyed by one man.
People a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Yo, I voted."